May it please the Court, Justice Steele, Justice Holland, Justice Berger, Justice Jacobs, and Justice Ridgely. When I had filed the opening brief in this case, before I had met with Mr. Cruz, I was unable to find him. I did eventually find him after that time, and through his parents who live in Ellesmere. And besides just wanting to bring him up to speed on everything, I wanted to ask him that about the relief that's being sought, which is essentially, I guess, a resentencing or a new violation of probation hearing, and the fact that since he was on level 3 probation at that time, told me he was being flowed down to level 2, did he want to forego that? Did he want to just ride out his probation and be done with this? And he was adamant that he wanted to fight this and stand up for what he thought was right and what was wrong in this case. And in doing so, we talked about the letter or supplement that he filed on the Rule 26C brief and how the court ordered that this should be remanded, or not remanded, but the motion to withdraw should be granted. And he asked me if I put the things, as he put it, in the brief that he argued, and because he felt very strongly about it. I said, well, yes, I did. I think I did, Mr. Cruz, but not in quite the same strong language that you used. If I read him right, he felt that he was placed in a situation that was unfair because he, after being acquitted of all the charges, the same judge who presided over the trial had the violation hearing scheduled the following week in front of him and found him to be in violation without the benefit of a hearing, although certainly the trial court heard all the evidence at trial, heard an admission to absconding from probation and such. But in Mr. Cruz's mind, I think I'm sure part of what he thought of was the trial court exhibiting a closed mind, included the fact that there was not a real evidentiary hearing held for his violation. Probably more so, he was angry because he thought the judge had already made up his mind about what was going on. I know there was some comment that, Judge, it's my birthday today. Can I get probation or something like that? And the judge simply said, happy birthday, and that was the end of the hearing at that time. So I'm sure he was fueled by, which is not unusual, by some anger and a feeling that the judge was predisposed to what he was going to do. But I think wrapped up in that was also the issue that the way the hearing was conducted. Certainly, if there was some kind of a hearing conducted, informal summary, that could have waylaid some of the concerns that Mr. Cruz had about the way he was, the way he went through the system.
Can I interrupt you at this point? Because I probably am not understanding the facts correctly. In order to be violated while you're on probation, I assume that the probation officer or somebody in the probation department has to set that in motion. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay, and they don't always do that. Somebody doesn't show up for an appointment or is caught out after hours or whatever, and they say, don't do that anymore, but they don't violate them, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay, and if I understand what happened here, he gets picked up for the new drug charges. A violation of probation is initiated. I don't know exactly how that happens, but anyhow, he then gets acquitted on all those charges, but he's still got the violation outstanding. And when the day came that was being decided, if I'm not mistaken, the probation officer said, well, as far as I'm concerned, he spent 120 days in jail on these charges that he got acquitted on. I consider us even, or something like that. To me, that was a withdrawal of the violation, wasn't it?
I thought the exact same thing, Your Honor, when I got this case, and I looked for the statutory authority or some authority that would allow a probation officer to essentially
dismiss it.
Exactly. Do they have the power to do that? I didn't find that, Your Honor.
You have the very short hearing attached as Exhibit B, and it shows that the only people entering an appearance were the defense attorney, Mr. Malik. So there was no prosecutor there. So when it came time to start the hearing, the only person speaking on behalf of the state was the probation officer.
I read that, Your Honor, as them, the state being unprepared to go forward. And I think I also read that that was not even his probation officer, that the gentleman who I see all the time was standing in for another probation officer. So even if they, even if he could have taken the stand, there may have been arguments by defense counsel. What, you know, you're talking about hearsay here, officer. You're not even the probation officer who was there.
Well, it wouldn't be hearsay if it were facts that were developed at trial. There'd be a record of it, and it would have been facts heard by the sentencing judge at the violation of probation hearing, correct?
Yes, sir. I think.
And it's not unusual at all for probation officers to present whatever there is to be presented for a probationer who's being handled by someone else.
Yes, Your Honor.
But as I read the record, nothing was presented. I mean, the probation officer wanted to stop, as Justice Berger's question indicated to you. And then with no evidence in the record at all, the judge said, well, you know, we had this trial, and he was found not guilty, and I understand that you would like to stop, and I understand Mr. Malik agrees. But as far as I'm concerned, he committed this, and it's a violation of probation. So it's the judge, without using the term, basically taking judicial notice without anyone introducing a transcript or asking him to take judicial notice. The judge just moves forward.
Exactly, Your Honor. And
was
I think,
he the judge at trial?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Was he the judge at trial?
Yes, he was, Your Honor. And it okay. Certainly, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
So I just want to get back to my point of law so that I know what the answer is. You're saying that once a violation of probation has been initiated, it can't be withdrawn?
I think that's right, Your Honor, because there's actually an arrest warrant. That is, an application is made to the court for an arrest warrant for a violation of probation. And once that warrant is signed, I think it's in the court's hands. I don't think a probation officer has the power to then dismiss that.
So whereas the Attorney General can file an indictment and then dismiss it, right?
That's right. I do believe that's right, Your Honor. I did look for it. It was my initial reaction in this case was that's the big issue.
There were three allegations of a violation of probation, correct? One was the absconding. Another was what?
Might have been a missed appointment, Your Honor.
Missed appointments. And the third was the new drug offense.
Yes, sir.
Is it accurate that the first two were not in dispute?
They were admitted at trial. The absconding was admitted at trial. I don't think the...
What are you referring to as the trial, the probation hearing?
No, sir, the actual trial on the new charges.
On the charges for which he was acquitted?
Yes, sir. But again, that was not properly before the court at the violation of probation hearing.
Well, there were two undisputed parole or probation violations, isn't that correct?
Your Honor, no. If I can back off what I just said, they could have been disputed.
They could have been disputed?
I think he
did abscond. And there was one other, totally apart from the charges for which he was acquitted. And
yes, Your Honor. I think at a minimum, though, in these informal and summary proceedings, the court needs to inquire of the defendant, you know, do you want to have an evidentiary hearing? Are you contesting these things, what I just heard you say last week? But the defense position is that at the VOP hearing, those things are still can be
contestable.
Contested. Yes, sir.
You find anything sort of Lewis Carroll-like about the trial judge who's just heard the defendant testify under oath at trial that he absconded from probation, offer him the opportunity to contradict himself and, in effect, commit perjury at a violation of probation hearing? Isn't that something like Alice in the Looking Glass?
It is almost a ridiculous statement for you to make, Your Honor. I'm only suggesting in the sense that due process requires some sort of hearing. And, you know, if we're going to follow the minimum due process rights that are here, certainly the defense, as absurd as it may be.
But if due process requires a hearing, despite admissions by the defendant at a trial over which the same judge presided, what exactly is the issue you're asking us to decide?
simply to remind or to instruct that there are minimal due process rights here, and under, you know, some minimal requirement, the defendant is entitled to a hearing, whether it's informal or summary.
Right. So, well, let's talk about those. Generally, they are notice of to the accused about what he's accused of having done.
Yes, sir.
Now, he did know that these were the elements that constituted a violation of probation.
Yes, he did.
An opportunity to be heard, and in some cases, not even representation by counsel, but he was represented by counsel. And it's correct, is it not, that the due process that attaches to a violation of probation hearing is not the same as a trial due process rights?
Absolutely right.
He was heard in the sense that he got to testify under oath about whether he absconded from probation at his trial, and he did testify. What's missing from the requisite elements of due process from this hearing, other than the trial judge didn't reconstitute the facts that he heard at a trial with the full panoply of rights at this violation of probation hearing? Notice was there, counsel was there, the defendant was there.
He was not given the opportunity to defend himself at that hearing.
To explain why he did not tell the truth at his trial when he said he absconded from probation.
As absurd as it is, Your Honor, I understand. I think
it's a constitutional right to commit perjury.
No, but it is a constitutional right to, I guess it may be, but it's not a wise thing.
I take it your point is that he should have been given an opportunity to explain why the facts that he testified to at trial didn't in reality constitute absconding or something along those lines.
It is, Your Honor. I'm absolutely standing for the proposition that the minimum due process requires some sort of evidence being presented, and if the evidence is not going to be presented, then, you know, there needs to be an admission by the defendant, some sort of concession that, Your Honor, we are not going to contest the facts that you heard at an earlier trial or something to that effect.
Sort of like a Robinson admission to violation of probation, like a Robinson plea.
That's probably the reality of it in the future, but this was wrong.
Mr. Teves, if you're right that there was a due process violation here, wouldn't that violation be harmless error given what occurred in this case?
It's Your Honor, I would argue that because this is a constitutional violation, it is harmless error. I mean, it is not harmless error. Had it not involved a constitutional issue, perhaps that standard would apply. But in this case, we have a defendant who was sentenced to about 18 months in jail without the benefit of a hearing.
Well, so if we look at what we see in this short transcript, and there were several charges, we'll just focus on two: the charge for which he was acquitted and the absconding. And the probation officer doesn't speak to any of the charges except the acquittal and says, as far as I'm concerned, and the acquittal ends this case and we're content with time served. Then the judge says, well, he's not only charged with that crime for which he was acquitted, he's charged with absconding. And based on what I heard last week, I'm finding him guilty of violating his probation. Now, at that point, since the defendant has an attorney, isn't it incumbent upon the attorney, if we're going to make a due process argument, to say, well, we'd like to present some evidence, or I'd like to call my client? So I don't see how we pursue your due process argument when we recite the record as I've just identified it, and then the attorney doesn't ask for an opportunity to either call the defendant or present other evidence.
Your Honor, the court knew about the Martini decision at the time of the hearing. Was it incumbent upon defense lawyer to request a hearing that is due his client constitutionally?
Well, no, he's at the hearing.
Right.
The hearing that he was constitutionally entitled to was convened. It's simply after the judge says, I'm going to find you guilty of violating your probation for absconding, and because looking at last week's evidence, 2 weeks ago evidence, under a preponderance of the evidence standard, I think you engaged in facts that constitute a violation of your probation. Then we don't see the defense attorney asking for it, saying anything to the effect, well, if that's going to be the court's position, before we go any further, I'd like to call my client as a witness, or I'd like to present other witnesses, right?
Like an admission from silence.
Right. Well, not an admission. You're saying there's a due process violation.
Right.
I'm saying the record reflects he's represented, and his counsel didn't ask for an affirmative opportunity to do anything.
I think that's an effective assistance, Your Honor. I think, yeah, you've got to at least inform your client of his rights and invoke if he wants to waive those rights.
So you're agreeing that the due process argument that you're making now was waived by the former counsel?
I don't want to go that far, Your Honor. I think the court.
Well, how was it preserved? I mean, how was the issue preserved?
Was the issue preserved? It was not preserved for appeal. No, it's here under the plain air standard as a violation of the Constitution, Your Honor. I don't think the defendant waived anything.
Well, I'm looking at your brief, and your brief frames the first issue as denial of due process because the state presented no evidence. And I'm saying, although the court never used the word judicial notice, we see the court referencing the prior proceedings, and based on the prior proceedings, in effect, taking judicial notice of what had occurred, and finds the person guilty of violating their probation. Then the defense attorney says nothing. So while the state might not have presented any evidence, and while the state might have decided it didn't want to send the deputy attorney general to the hearing, at least the probation officer showed up, the hearing commenced, and the judge appears to have taken judicial notice. So don't we have to assume that evidence that the court noticed was in the record?
No, Your Honor. Right? Judicial notice of prior testimony. I think I can agree that perhaps that was part of the record, but I can't agree that Mr. Cruz waived anything by the silence of his lawyer.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I wanted to get back to something from the very beginning, which has to do with where your client is right now. The order was entered May 30th, 2008, to serve 18 months, which my math tells me is over.
Yes, ma'am, he's out.
But not only out, but through with probation, too.
No, ma'am, not as of about a month ago. He was being flowed down from level 3 to level 2. He's a chef at a restaurant in town. So he is...
What town?
Yeah, 1717 Cafe, Your Honor.
I don't understand that. If the whole sentence was 18 months and 18 months have expired, how could there be probation on top of that? Or is that?
I can respond to the court probably if you want a more formal response. My impression, since he was just on probation and just being flowed down from 3 to 2, that he was still on probation. And I talked to him about, do you really want to go back in for a resentencing if that's what's going to happen? And he said, absolutely, I'm fine with that.
Well, what could happen at the resentencing?
The probationary period, I think, that he's serving is probably constitutes whatever back time he has on his sentence. So that could actually be reimposed, right? He's been doing well, and I doubt that would happen, Your Honor. But he could get more time.
Well, why don't we go to your second point, which seems to relate to the court taking judicial notice of evidence that no one asked the court to take judicial notice of. You say the judge had a closed mind. The thrust of your argument seems to be that when the probation officer wanted to just stop the proceedings and let everything go, the judge decided The judge didn't want to do that because the judge had come away from the trial with the impression that the jury made a mistake. So you want to elaborate on what your legal argument is?
The legal argument, Your Honor, would be that that fact, along with the fact that the court was aware of Martini, aware of Superior Court Criminal Rule 32.1, heard no evidence and proceeded right to sentencing, essentially, besides taking the judicial notice of the trial, the prior trial. But that does exhibit a closed mind. Now, and that's only, I think, it's not because of the particular facts of the case. It's just that the court knew of Martini and did not conduct the hearing in accordance with that. And again, we do very informal and summary proceedings on these violations. And it might be a little bit of a slippery slope where we get a little...
But couldn't it also exhibit an assumption by the judge that the defendant would say the exact same thing that he said in his trial under oath?
Yes.
So that's not a closed mind, is it?
No. No, Your Honor. And that's why
I think... Was there ever at any time a proffer as to whether anything different would be presented than was presented at the trial?
Never was that proffer made, no. Mr. Cruz's best argument is that, you know, he was just angry about the way he thought he was treated unfairly in the way any non-lawyer citizen might feel. But wrapped up in that, I think, is the fact that there was no hearing, no real hearing that was held to determine the violation. So in that way, I can stand in front of the court and suggest there was a closed mind because the court knew there has to be some kind of hearing beyond just meeting and telling everybody.
It's basically, aren't you repeating the due process argument just under a different guise?
I think so, Your Honor. Yes, sir. I think the strongest argument is due process, and the closed mind argument just sort of rolls in with that somewhat.
Can this type of error, assuming there is error, be harmless?
No, Your Honor. It's of constitutional dimension, so it's not harmless error. Because to decide otherwise and affirm under these facts...
What case says that there can never be harmless error of this kind?
That would be... I would go to the Sixth Amendment right to it. Due process, Your Honor.
I don't remember the case, Mr. Tease, but the United States Supreme Court has summarized those constitutional errors that are subject to a harmless error analysis and those that are not. And the list of ones that are not subject to a harmless error analysis is pretty short.
Okay.
So the fact that it's a constitutional violation doesn't mean that it's impossible to do a harmless error analysis.
Understood, Your Honor. I don't have that case, Your Honor. I'd be happy to provide it to the court if given the opportunity. I'll try to find it. I do see I'm in my rebuttal time. May I? I tried to reserve 5 minutes, and I failed to do that, Your Honor.
We often prevent that from happening, so we'll save the rest of your time.
Thank you, Judge. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court. James Wakely on behalf of the state. If I may first begin by answering Justice Berger's question. It appears that as of yesterday, Mr. Cruz remains on probation, although the entire time of his sentence remains short. Should he go back for resentencing, by the time that resentencing occurs, it is quite likely that no remaining portion of his original sentence will remain.
At which point, what happens?
I would assume it would be an event with no consequence to Mr. Cruz. Obviously, the court could say, I sentence you to time served, which he already completed.
Okay, and could you answer my other question? Is there no ability for the probation department to decide to dismiss or withdraw or some other way vacate a VOP proceeding?
Well, in 11 Del Code 4334, I believe subsection D, there is the ability for probation and parole to resolve certain classes of violations internally by flowing someone from one step to another. However, it's my understanding that once the administrative warrant is filed with the court, then it becomes the Department of Justice's purview to enter a nolle prosequi as to the charge.
Well, in this case, we can call it a hypothetical if we don't want to call it this case. When the state sends no deputy attorney general, in my hypothetical, and the probation officer is there, and the superior court says, this is the time for the violation of probation hearing. If the probation officer stood up in my hypothetical and said, Your Honor, we've decided not to proceed, what would happen?
Your Honor, this court's held before that the superior court's not bound by what the probation officer suggests. I know of no case law that says that in those circumstances a probation officer stands in the shoes of the Department of Justice.
So you're saying that in that hypothetical situation, the only thing the judge can do, or at least what the judge ought to be doing, is basically recessing the hearing and insisting that a deputy AG be there?
Certainly not, Your Honor. The court could consider the probation officer's recommendation along with whatever, obviously accepting this circumstance because there were other bases for the violation.
Well, in my hypothetical, if that happened, no evidence would be presented.
Yes.
And in my hypothetical, the judge would say, thank you, Mr. Probation Officer. You may have decided not to proceed, but I'm going to proceed anyway, and I'm taking judicial notice that 2 weeks ago this man was acquitted by a jury, and I heard the evidence, and I'm convinced that a preponderance of the evidence shows he violated probation. So there's a violation, and that would be entirely proper.
Yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Wakely, I'd like to ask you, and the first question I'm going to ask, I know the answer to, but I want to have your answer on the record. Does the Department of Justice allow police officers to prosecute trials?
No, Your Honor.
Why does the Department of Justice allow probation officers to prosecute violation of probation hearings when the Constitution says the Attorney General represents the state of Delaware?
Well, accepting, of course, Your Honor, that I am not authorized to speak for the higher-ups in the Department of Justice, my understanding is it is a limited pool of resources with which we have to work, and that these hearings are afforded a relatively low priority.
Do you agree if a deputy attorney general had been there that the deputy attorney general would understand the rules that the judge was talking about preponderance of the evidence and rules of judicial notice and could have prevented this entire issue from ever arising and becoming an appellate issue?
I don't know if that's necessarily the case here, Your Honor. In this case, and the reason I take issue with your point, Your Honor, is there was contempt committed, a violation of his probation committed in the face of the court itself. He was noticed, properly noticed, for a violation of probation hearing in July of 2008, and he absconded. Or in July of 2007, I'm sorry. And he absconded. He fled to Texas. That was an admitted violation. That alone would have provided the Superior Court the authorization to violate the terms of his probation after a hearing.
Even if the deputy AG was there and said we'd choose not to proceed?
I would believe, Your Honor, even if we chose to proceed on the remainder of the administrative warrant, that would have provided sufficient justification for the court itself to violate the terms of his probation.
But what we're all trying to get at is that a deputy attorney general has apparently complete discretion to enter a nolle pros as to the violation of probation as to all of them. If there are six or four or three or whatever number, that a deputy attorney general could have stood there on the day of this particular hearing and said, Your Honor, I've consulted with the probation officer. The guy has served 120 days in prison. We're withdrawing the VOP. At that point, would you agree that the judge would not have the authority to violate the guy and enter any kind of sentence?
Your Honor, you must forgive me. I'm not entirely familiar. I was never a trial prosecutor. My understanding is the court need not accept the entry of the nulli prosequi. The court can dismiss the charge of its own motion, but need not accept the for any other basis, but need not accept the prosecutor saying, we enter a nulli prosequi.
With your caveat about your experience, is it not correct that it is a rare thing indeed for a superior court judge to miss the opportunity to have a violation of probation hearing? Under what circumstances would any superior court judge routinely not say, hallelujah, that a probation officer doesn't want to proceed, case dismissed? Is this indicative of a closed mind because it's so unusual for a superior court judge to proceed with a violation of probation when the probation officer doesn't want to proceed, that we should look at the entire scenario from the beginning as objective evidence of a closed mind?
Your Honor, I would suggest that there is other evidence that suggests this is not evidence of a closed mind. And it was actually something
Is it unusual for a superior court judge to move forward with a violation of probation hearing when the probation officer doesn't wish to proceed?
Certainly, it would be unusual in my experience for a superior court judge at the entry of a nulli prosequi or any indication that the state does not wish to go forward to continue the case. It would be unusual, yes, Your Honor.
Why isn't that evidence of a closed mind? This judge was going to go ahead with this sentencing no matter what.
Well, Your Honor, just to point back to the record of the trial, at the conclusion of the record of trial, Mr. Cruz asked to have his bail reduced to unsecured bail. This is a man who had fled and was being held by every indication for the violation of probation hearing that was to conclude the next week. The trial judge agreed to reduce the bail to unsecured bond, release him back out onto the street after he made the bond. Certainly, this is not indicative that he had a closed mind that he was going to sentence him to a substantial period of time the very next week. The judge got to the hearing, listened to Mr. Cruz. He listened to Mr. Cruz at the conclusion of trial as to his reasons why he absconded. According to Mr. Cruz, at that time, he left because his grandmother was ill in Texas, suffering from Alzheimer's. He listened to that. At the hearing, he listened to Mr. Cruz's statements the judge had indicated that he was inclined to find him in violation.
I missed the word inclined.
Yeah, so did I.
That he was finding him in violation. I'm sorry, Your Honor. He allowed Mr. Cruz to address any matter before the court. Mr. Cruz was represented, made no objection to what had gone on. Certainly, the sentence was not unduly excessive. It was not the maximum amount of time that Mr. Cruz had remaining on his sentence. And there was no evidence that this came as a result of anything that the judge was not allowed to consider.
What does the record reflect when the probation officer said, we don't want to go forward? Why did the judge go forward anyway?
I can't speak for Judge Babiarz, Your Honor. I can only assume that it, based on his review of the evidence at the preceding trial and his...
Well, I think, Justice Solomon, means what does the record reflect the reason why he went forward?
Only to the extent that I believe the judge's later response to the motion for reduction of sentence indicates that he believed that the jury's verdict at trial was against the weight of the evidence, that he believed that Mr. Cruz had possessed the drugs that were found in his home, and that he had also absconded without good cause and without permission, and that a violation was warranted in that case.
Didn't the judge say, or can't the transcript fairly be read to say that the trial judge thought that Mr. Cruz was guilty of those drug violations, and the acquittal of those violations by the jury could only be justified in terms of the difference between proof beyond a reasonable doubt and proof by a preponderance?
That is a fair reading of the trial record, Your Honor. If the court has no further questions, the state would rest on its brief. Thank you.
Thank you. 1 minute and 35 seconds, Mr. Hughes.
Your Honor, if I could just, the only thing I could really add, I guess, at this point would be that the practice on the violations often is if you go in and indicate a desire to contest the charge of a violation and there's no deputies there, I think almost all of the judges in Newcastle will say, okay, we're scheduling this for a contested hearing, get a deputy in here and we'll be ready to go on that date. So I think the trial court recognizes that deputies are needed in many circumstances.
And this was uncontested that both sides felt that it should be dropped.
That's right. And I'm assuming that included the deputy who was involved who didn't show up. I think it was Mr. O'Neill.
That's not in the record.
He was not there?
No, he had an intent to drop the charge.
That could, absolutely, Your Honor. By his absence, I think I was assuming that. That's probably the wrong thing to do. Absolutely. I have nothing for the court. Thank you.
Thank you. Council will take the case under advisement and adjourn.